Okay, so for generations, Siberia hasn't really been a country for many of us. Whether it's a social reference, political, romantic, or geographic, it means exile to a lot of people, and it often means cold. Siberia is more a metaphor. It's a concept. It's a figure of speech, not a country. Think about political thinkers like Lenin, who famously suffered. He was forced to serve time in prison camps there in Siberia. Or even romantic heroes like Dr. Zhivago, cruelly separated from the ones they love, sent to the icy tundras of Siberia. But is Siberia actually a prison? Ian Fraser doesn't think so. He's got a new book out called Travels in Siberia, and it's kind of a confession of love for this country and its people. He joins us now from Raleigh, North Carolina. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning, Celeste. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for coming on the show. You took five long trips to Siberia, and at the end of 12 years of travel there, you ended up calling Siberia the greatest horrible country in the world.
Well, that was more in reference to Russia itself. But yes, I mean, Siberia is, like Russia, both great, really great, physically, and horrible at the same time.
Well, I mean, you describe in your book very graphically all the hardships that you had while you were traveling there. It's in detail. It's hardly a Club Med vacation. But you clearly love the country. I mean, the entire book is a bit of your fascination, your adoration for Siberia itself, and you kept returning there. What was the attraction?
Well, I like wilderness. Siberia has an enormous amount of wilderness, and I like the stories that took place there, the people who were exiled there, the people who survived, the explorers who went there, the travelers who crossed it. It's kind of like a place that people return to. It's kind of a test for people, and it's a place where people have been going for centuries sort of to explore it and explore themselves.
And it's kind of the place that seems to fascinate you in many of your books. I mean, the Great Plains, On the Res,
right.
you love these large, empty places, places that I can't imagine you yourself living, but you have an admiration for the kind of people that do live there.
Well, people adapt to where they live, and a lot of people, believe it or not, are quite happy living in Siberia. It's away from many of the strictures of society. It was a place where when serfs went there, if serfs escaped and went to Siberia, they were no longer serfs. Now, of course, then they were in Siberia, but they were no longer, you know, they were comparatively free, I mean, compared to where they'd been before.
You know, Ian, you used to live on Canal Street, right, above Canal Rubber.
I did.
Yeah, about as far away from Siberia as anyone could imagine. Densely populated Canal Street in the middle of Manhattan. You know, there's a Chekhov story called On the Steppe, which is a hugely evocative story of just a trip across the desolation of eastern Russia. Why is it so vivid, this place that seems so featureless, when you begin to describe the endless journeys that you have to take from place to place?
Well, it has a lot to do, I think, with the identity of Russia, and also, I think, with the identity of the United States. We're both continental countries, and Chekhov found in Siberia something. He made a trip there himself, and he went all the way to Sakhalin Island, and he found something, I guess, transcendent about it. A great traveler of the 19th century said, monotony is the divinity of Russia. And I think if you don't understand the monotony of a place, and that's true of the United States as much as it is of Russia, you don't really understand the place. If you only know Canal Street and the densely packed, you know, part of it, the bustling part of it, you don't really know it. You also have to know the empty and often boring parts of it.
Well, you know, you seemed in some ways kind of cowed by the immensity of, I mean, Siberia covers 1/12 of all the land on Earth.
Right.
And that seems to have, in some ways, made you a bit timid. I remember the moment where you're talking about how you wanted to go and visit some prisons, but your guides would drive by them and you wouldn't say anything. And then tell us what happened when you finally stopped at an abandoned prison camp.
Well, it took a while to sort of get past whatever tact you have as a foreigner. You don't want to immediately go to the thing that the people are ashamed of, in the same way that we here would not be really all that eager to take foreigners maybe to see Wounded Knee or something like that. You know, there are other things to look at. But finally, we did, my guide and I did find a whole road of abandoned prison camps in the far north. And these camps were in a place that was permafrost and frozen all year long and almost perfectly preserved from 1954 and totally abandoned without a word of signage, without a plaque saying what it was, without anything. It's just the camp itself. And we went down to it through the snow, and there was the barracks, and there was the barbed wire, and there was the guard tower. And we sort of silently went through it and looked at it and took it in. And
but you didn't
with
go
something
into
like that, you don't. You,
you
know,
didn't go into the barracks,
you're not
though.
So much a tourist as you are a witness, or I don't know what. You're there in sort of respectful, awestruck silence, I guess. But we did. I did finally get to a prison. But it did take some doing.
Hmm. Speaking of awestruck silence, tell us a little bit about the bugs when the sun comes out in Siberia. I gather it takes more than a can of off to deal with Siberia's insect friends.
Well, the mosquitoes are really something. I mean, I had organic-based repellent, that kind that has citronella in it, and they laugh at that. That to them is
food.
Yeah, I mean, that's just garnish, you know. When I had DDT, or what am I saying? DEET, not DDT, but
that'd be a different story, Ian.
The DDT would be something else. No, I had repellent with DEET, and that they work around. You know, they don't like it, but they work around it.
Well, you know, one of the moments when you truly felt the isolation of Siberia was you were there on September 11th in 2001, right?
We drove all the way across the country in 2001, and as it happened, we reached the Pacific Ocean on September 11th. And when I called home on September 12th, I had a satellite phone. September 12th there was still September 11th in New York City. When I called home and talked to my family, I found out what had happened. We were in such a remote place that nothing else, no other news had come through. So I was the first person to tell people in that part of the world what had happened. And it was as stunning for me as it was, you know, for Americans in general. But I was by myself, and I was near some people who were catching salmon illegally. They were poaching salmon. And when they saw me sort of sitting there stunned, they brought me an illegally caught salmon as a present.
Wow. What a
sense. Because of what had happened in America. And the fact that it was illegally caught touched me even more.
Ian Fraser, author of many books. His latest is called Travels in Siberia, a love song of a kind to a country and a people. Thanks so much for joining us, Ian.
Well, thank you for having me.
That story, what a sense of isolation you get.
Yeah, to complete
standing
remoteness.
On a beach in Siberia and not knowing about 9/11 until you call on a sat phone. Thanks this morning to Posey Gruner for all her terrific booking and production over the past few months. Great job, Posey. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.